Jason, ITS's head of customer experience, and we're going to be having a chat around all things customer experience in the industry, what's going on, and how's it going really out there. Jason, do you want to start by just telling us a bit about you, about what you've been up to, where your career came from, and what you do at ITS?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. So, Jason Stanton, head of service management and transformation.
Did I get your job title?
You did.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I'm not precious about it at all.
Good.
Emperor of customer experience.
Emperor.
So, I've been here with ITS since November of last year. Mm. So I'm not going to get away with the same new for very much longer, I don't think.
I don't think you can anymore.
No. But my background, 25 years in the world of contact centres, customer experience, telecoms, a little bit outside of telecoms.
With great power comes great responsibility, Emperor, customer experience. How big a role really is it in the industry in terms of that customer experience piece versus everything else?
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think I would say, although I do, it's the most important thing, of course, because it's what I'm passionate about. I think, but if you look at how competitive markets are these days, you've got to differentiate yourself in some way. And you could do that on pricing, but if your service doesn't meet that element of it, you know, our customers will absolutely go somewhere else. But it's an area that you've got to constantly evolve, constantly improving.
Yeah.
You just can't sit there and go, well, I'm number one this week in, you know, customer satisfaction, if I don't need to do anything.
Mm.
You've got to be thinking ahead all of the time. But I'm a madly passionate, you know, fan of, you know, we buy from people that we like doing business with.
Yeah.
You know, so understanding each of our customers, I think, is really important. Not all of them are the same, either.
How difficult is that to manage with that difference, spectrum?
It can be really difficult because it depends on how you segment your customers and how you know, do you have different service propositions that for the different customer types that you deal with. But, you know, I would start absolutely beginning from around education.
Yeah.
It's about customers understanding our business. It's about customers understanding the way that we work. But it's also about customers understanding that when we get something wrong, they can come and talk to us about it, more importantly, do something about it.
Obviously, sometimes in any customer relationship, things go wrong. Do you think that that's kind of the end of the story, or do you think actually the way you respond to some of that's more important than everything else?
It's absolutely the way that you respond. But I think if I take it back to that segmentation, you know, if you're dealing with some of our bigger customers, our more strategic customers, and actually they understand the big corporate giant type of thing that we will get there one day. So they expect things sometimes to go wrong, and absolutely, as you say, it's how you deal with that, how you fix it, how you learn from it, and make sure it doesn't happen again. Perhaps some of our smaller customers find that a little bit more difficult, you know, because that one order that they may place with us is the most important thing going forward. But again, I think it's about we understanding that at the beginning, understanding the journey. But, you know, a great example, I haven't been here very long, and we had a customer who complained about an order that they placed. It was only for having a conversation with that customer that I realised that order that they placed with us, that was the start of a much bigger journey for that customer, because on the back of the broadband order, they were placing CCTV, alarm monitoring. That's not something that we would normally understand and capture from our customers.
Yeah.
So, you know, to our people, it's a broadband order, but to our customers, it's a much, much bigger
thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you measure customer satisfaction, customer sentiment, and that whole experience piece?
Well, you know, I think you've got your normal metrics that you would use in any business, such as CSAT and NPS, or Net Promoter Score. And they do serve a purpose. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And they will give you, a view of what customers are thinking about you. But I think sometimes we can just spend too much time on those metrics, because actually what we should be doing is capturing that feedback every single day. So every interaction we have with a customer, be it email, telephone, conversation, where there's any expression of dissatisfaction or even satisfaction, you know, we should be capturing that and working on it real time. You know, if I link that to what we're doing here within ITS, you know, at the moment, we will do a quarterly NPS survey, you know, and we take the feedback from that survey and we'll form an action plan and work on that. But actually, we recognise that sometimes it's a little bit too late to actually then work and fix in the things. So we're going to move to what we call a real-time NPS,
okay,
which means Every time a customer places an order with us, that order is complete, or every time a customer raises a fault and then we fix it, they will automatically get a survey back of that, and we will then get real-time feedback.
Okay.
So it enables us to, you know, deal with it in a much more timely manner. What's really important about that for me as well is we do a lot of things right, and it's really important that we continue to do those right. You know, so, you know, I think there's a myth around there that customers actually only fill in surveys when something's gone wrong. That's not true. You know, and doing the job that I do, I try and complete those surveys, you know, as a consumer, as much as I can, because I know, you know, people like me act upon those. But it's really important that we continue to focus on the things we're doing well, better, as well as fixing the things that perhaps we don't.
Is it best when those surveys are quite simple, Pearson? Because I've had them before where you get into it and then you open it and it's like, rate us from 1 to 10, fine, give us a comment, fine. You click next and then there's a whole page of options, like other things that they want to know. And like, I'm going to give up there. I can't ask me things I've not been involved in or whatever. How simple, I guess the question is, do you find you get a better response rate if you make that really simple?
Absolutely. You don't get me wrong, you still have to do a whole communication piece around your survey and what's important. And I think you'll get customer apathy if you don't act upon the feedback. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, if I take NPS, that's why it's my favourite way of measuring customer satisfaction, because it's one question. Mm. And that one question is, you know, would you recommend this to your friend and family? So it's a globally recognised question, it's one question. You know, whereas, you know, you see yourself as a consumer, you'll receive those surveys after you've bought something, and there's like 50 questions sometimes around it. You know, now, doing the job I do, I like to complete those anyway, but then I always put at the end. Yeah, but I always put at the end, you need to look at this survey and actually reduce it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if you look at technology, you know, you've got, now when you ring into a contact centre, you get offered a survey, you know, at the end of the call. I've got lots of that to that in the past. Whereas that, in my opinion, can be a survey that's often can be influenced, let's say, by your contact centre advisors, and therefore personally not a fan of.
Mm.
You'll also see, you know, you'll get them via your email, you'll get them via a text message, you know, where you've tried to simplify them. And then you may go along to places where you see the little sort of iPad boards now with the smiley faces.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your amber, your yellow, your greens, and you go and press one of those. That was technology that I was really keen on actually trialing. For a period, I worked for a well-known search looking after customer satisfaction. And I thought it would be a really great way when someone left the cinema, did you enjoy your experience today? So all they would have to do is prep them and smiley faces. What I actually didn't realise, but on the back of that, is we started to get your really mixed feedback. And I'm sort of going, oh, we've been doing all this work on, you know, the experience, yeah, it's not coming through as a result. But what I realised when we did some secondary conversation with our customers there was they were basing that opinion on whether they liked the film or not, not the experience. So, you know, I remember a few weeks later, flying somewhere, you know, going on holiday, I think it was somewhere, and in end of security, you've got these
accounts. You do, yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought it'd be real fun if I just went and pressed the red button every time, because it's part of my whole day I hate. Yeah, and it's part of what I don't think ever improves.
Yeah, it's a bit of a drill, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, the queues are really long, you know, whatever. So I always constantly press the red button on that, because I'm thinking, what can I do with it? What can they do with it? They don't really know why I'm pressing, you know, that red button. Actually, as I'm talking to you about this now, I hope nobody knows someone who works in the box. Now I'm going to get stopped every time I answer when I go through security.
What did you find was the biggest driver of people's happiness in the cinema? I'm interested.
Absolutely all about the film.
Yeah.
Like,
it's about the film, but it's actually one of the other dissatisfiers is the prices and you know, the food and drink in cinema.
Yeah.
That came through quite strongly as well.
So can you share some examples about how kind of that gathering that insight has actually improved a service or has been kind of fed back into the business to do something and have a positive impact?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't give you an example of your ITS, which is a really great example. So we were receiving feedback from customers, but it came very strongly through very strongly in our first NPS survey that we did earlier this year. But it was also coming back via some of our account managers. And that was the fact that because it depends how long it took to the phone. Yeah, when they rang you. We did a review of our then telephony system and found that actually the flexibility that we had within that system, the visibility of just calls coming into our teams, it was just not there. And that actually wasn't helping us manage from that point of view. So we made the decision to actually invest in a new telephony platform. So we did that earlier this year. Since then, our call answer performance has increased by about 30%, just by having that increase in visibility and understanding customer behaviour. Because actually, you know, it changes depending on what industry and what type of customer that you're actually dealing with. So we learned that, you know, we'll get, first thing in the morning, we'll get a lot of calls, and then we'll get them later on. So then we were able to match our resource profiles to those calls as well.
And how closely do you work with kind of the other departments across the business? Because I would imagine there's something here, isn't there, about, you know, right, is it a product issue? Mm. Is it a service issue? Is it a finance issue?
Yeah. So, you know, my role stretch is completely end-to-end. So how I like to describe it with people, that's what I do, is I believe I can help with being back to the customer internally. Yeah, but I think it's also part of my job to hold each of those parts to account when it comes to actual customer experience. Yeah, and helping educate internally about how it feels for a customer. When you work in any role, you know, often it's around the process and the transaction. And sometimes that means you don't think outside that box about how it feels. You know, and if we think about us as consumers, often, you know, we talk about how we feel after we've bought something or something's happened to us. You know, and everybody is really, you know, really different. You know, going back to maybe calls for a second. I used to work for a different telecoms company. Then we were having a problem with our call answer rate. Customers were complaining how long they answered. And we went back and searched. And we know that on average at that time, customers only waited for 40 seconds. Mm. But actually, when we went and spoke to them, anybody who waited more than 40 seconds told us it was 2 minutes.
Hard to judge, isn't it? Like a length of time. Hold your breath now for 40 seconds. You're looking.
Yeah, absolutely. But you can probably tell already from the 10 minutes or so we've been talking is that, you know, I'm a massive fan of storytelling and experience, you know, and taking that and trying to help, you know, people understand it from that point of view as well by using some of those examples about, if you were in that situation, what would you do?
Someone told me if you have a bad experience, you'll tell on average 10 people about it. But if you have a good experience, you'll only tell one or two because you kind of expect that good experience. Yeah. You don't expect the bad. Have you heard that before?
I have. Mm. That's a stat I've heard before. And interestingly, last week, I did a session here internally all around. We called it Customer Lunch and Learn. And one of the stats that I used in there, and this is in general, this is not, you know, not us as a company, but in general, 4% of customers ever complain about service. Of the 96% that actually don't complain, you on average lose 20% without.
No one likely to complain unless it's really bad. I'm just not buying it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just put what you think, don't you?
Just stop buying it, whatever they're selling you.
Which is why it's really important when it comes to, you know, if customers haven't transacted with you for a while, you follow it up, doesn't it? Why?
Yeah.
And that's when you start to find that. In our NPS survey within ICS, we still survey customers that haven't placed an order with us for a period, just so we can understand the reasons for that.
What's the best experience you've ever had?
Oh, gosh. Do you know what I think? I genuinely think it is. I went to Dubai on holiday, and in the hotel in Dubai was, you know, you have your normal sort of, you know, in-room, you know, information, and you've got your room service menu in there. And there was a welcome letter from the hotel general manager, and it actually, in there, said, here's our values, you know, within the business, the company, and, you know, here's our commitment to you. And one of the commitments was, we will all say hello to you before you say hello back. I made it my mission holiday that I was going to catch them out. And do you know what I never did?
Did you know?
Did I catch them out? I was sort of always hiding, you know, behind doors and things to try and catch them. You know, and it was something that, you know, they stuck to it at that point of view. But again, I thought, well, that could, you know, that's an easy thing to do in some respects. But you knew it had feeling behind it. They really did welcome you.
That's a customer promise, isn't it? that's the thing. I think that's what experience. What's your best ever experience?
So I had one recently. I went to Centre Park for the weekend in July and took on both it on a bike. So I took a mountain bike because you can get out for the one at Nottingham. So mountain bike trails behind it. And first day I got there, I went to cycle to the supermarket. The pedal fell off my bike. It was good because I wanted to get out. I thought I'm never going to get it fixed. If dog worry finds happened, I'll hire one of their bikes for the weekend. I need to get about. On the Saturday morning when I went down to like the bike hire place, she said, "Oh, have you got a book?" And I said, "No, I didn't book one. I brought my bike, it's broken." And she says, she asked me a couple of questions, "What's my work? Can we help fix it?" And she's like, "You know what? I'll give you a staff bike for nothing while you're here." She said, "I'm really sorry that your bike's broken." And I just thought it was really nice for Kiri empowered to make that decision without having to go to a manager, without having to go and get permission or any of that. Just said, "Off you go, have this for free. It cost them nothing. The bikes are sitting there, cost them absolutely nothing." I felt like it really helped me out, and I've told people about that since I got back.
Fantastic.
How about you?
Mine is an example of what was the best experience but switched to the worst experience. So before I had children, I had Mini Coopers, loved them, and I used to love the experience of going to the Mini Garage, and it was a really consistent experience. I'd go in there for a service and it'd make me feel at home, and nice coffee, and jump on the Wi-Fi there and do this, that and the other. And I noticed over maybe a 3-year period, they started to strip back off some of the home comforts to the point where you're going in and you were just dropping your keys off and actually if you were having to hang around. And I completely fell out of love with the brand.
Because of
the experience that I'd get going in, from it being this kind of warm and snuggly, let's do it, to quite a transactional, hand your keys over.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not an insignificant, you know, buying any car.
It's expensive.
And that was interesting that they just didn't keep the standard. And maybe they couldn't have afforded to, maybe they were overshooting, but still there was just something where they'd not read it.
I think cars are emotive as well. I feel that when something, your car's fine when it's fine, when something goes wrong, you need to know you'll get it fixed. I had an issue with mine a couple of years ago, and we paid up, you were amazing actually. And they own Minis, it's surprising.
Yeah. But I think that's a great example of what I mentioned earlier, isn't it, around a mansion. You know, you've told them that that's a great part of you know, the service and what you do. And I think they've probably scored so highly that, but we don't need to do that anymore. You know, we've ticked the box, we move on. That's why it's so important that when customers say they love that part, continue to do it.
Yeah.
And even commercially, you know, you say you can't afford it, it's still a cost because you've left them completely.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Cost associated, you know, absolutely to that as well.
So looking out towards changing technology, Jason, how are the likes of emerging tech and AI going to impact kind of your area?
So I absolutely believe we all have an opportunity to improve through technology. You know, customer demand for self-serve is probably the highest it's been. But what we still got to think about, there is an element of customers who don't want to use self-serve or can't use self-serve. And in lots of cases, you've still got to think about, you know, perhaps someone who has disabilities, for example. You know, there's still an element there from a consumer world, certainly, from that point of view. From an AI, I'll come back to self-serve in a second, again. From an AI point of view, it's really exciting time. So I do some work for a volunteer judge for the Contact Centre Management Association. So I'm one of the judges for both the European and UK contact centre ones. What I love and what's great about that is I get to hear about what everybody else is doing. You know, in the world of contact centres, and a lot of it involves red tech. So it's about, you know, what they're doing to actually introduce more self-serve. You know, AI's been a big, certainly, you know, I've been judging a few months ago and AI came up quite a lot. So from an education point of view, I love it because I learn lots of stuff, you know, it's better. What worries me personally still is going back to what I said earlier, which is often I think my people.
Yeah.
If we take a lot of that away and suddenly, you know, you've got to do everything is very transactional. I just wonder, are you going to get the same feelings, you know, around it? And I think AI's got a part to play in some of that transaction where it's really simple. But, you know, I heard a sort of story where a company was thinking of replacing their whole contact centre with robots, AI. You know, people are going, how that's a lab. I can't see it. Because there is going to be a question that that person gets asked that day, no matter what, they will not be able to answer it. I don't believe that they'll be able to answer it. You know, and what happens then?
You want that person approach as well. Sometimes you're in a company, you're having a chat with them. Sometimes the chat, the friendliness, the way someone, tone of voice when someone kind of answers your question or whatever. And I imagine you can use tech to make getting to that point more frictionless.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse on your enter your account number. Oh, I don't know what. You're scrambling around for it, trying to type it in on something, it's not working, it's not recognising it. Yes, if you can use the intelligence to get that bit, so you just go straight through to someone and they know who you are and they can see all your stuff, yeah. Great. But actually, that interaction with people and them helping you out and finding a way.
Definitely. Don't get me wrong, I think intelligence, you know, we're collating more and more information, and we're so data rich, aren't we, in the world now that, you know, it feels like you walk down the streets and somebody's collected that data on you. You know, I remember introducing a live chat was a contacts, you know, strategy within a previous company that I worked. And when I sat down with each of the suppliers who were bidding for the business, but you know, the first thing I said is, I want this to be live, I want it to be a person. I'm not having any of that robot stuff because, you know, I just think it's come across very personal. And I remember one company, and it's the company we chose to go with in the end, said, yeah, but we believe we've taken all of, you know, that feedback on board, and we have a bot version that actually, you know, we believe, you know, is as equal as chatting to a human. So I said, give it me, I'm going to try it, yeah? You know, and the first thing I did, you know, I sat the question and said, would you like to go away for a drink tonight? And I got the immediate say, no, thank you, I'm not sure. So they have really started to think about, you know, all of those questions. I was determined I was going to catch it out at some point, you know, from that point of view. We actually didn't go with the bot version quite yet, because what I wanted to do in that particular scenario was I wanted to capture all of that, those queries that customers were asking us on my chat, to eventually move towards, you know, a bot version that I knew would give them the answer that they really needed.
I guess this is where kind of the human element fits really nicely, though, with that kind of AI piece. So, you know, being able to interpret and look at patterns in terms of feedback and that kind of almost like passive listening piece where it can really help you.
The moral of the story is be careful with getting rid of people and replacing them with emails and chatbots, because they'll just...
There's going to be an IT documentary. Like,
there will be one, there'll be a post office. Yeah.
Well, there'll definitely will be.
Mr. Tanton versus ex-insurance. There you go. So, from the bad of the tech to the good of the tech, what piece of tech would you not live without?
Do you know what? I was trying to think of something different other than my phone. Because I thought, I want to be the thing that's like different. Because I thought I might get asked this question. But I think it still is my phone. Yeah? And I think it's because we're just, you know, you don't remember anybody's numbers, do you?
No.
Ever. Yeah? Yeah, I'm looking for a number of my own. You have everything stored in your phone. I do everything on my phone. I bank on my phone. I shop on my phone. You know, I think it has still got to be my phone.
Well, no one's chosen my piece of tech yet.
No, they haven't.
What's your piece of tech?
It's a meat thermometer.
What? Is that because you've experienced like a really bad thing where meat was in your
mouth? No, just, you know.
Right,
you've got to get it right.
We're going to do a spin-off podcast on
yeah. It's called, we've got the meat thermometer.
The meat thermometer.
Oh, well, I think that's an amazing place to wrap
it
up.
Is.
This episode. Thanks so much, Jason, for joining us.
Thank you.
And please remember to like, subscribe, share with your colleagues, and you'll find us on all the major platforms, Spotify, YouTube.
Excellent. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Yeah.